Hello and welcome back to Clinicians Brief, the podcast, the conversations behind the content. I'm your host, Becky Mosser, registered veterinary technician, and I am so excited for today's conversation and today's guest. Today we're going to be covering an article that came out in May 2019, Clinicians Brief, covering the chill protocol to manage aggressive and fearful dogs. And I know this is a conversation and a concern for so many veterinary professionals out there when we have aggressive and fearful dogs in our practice and we want to do right by them. So joining me today is one of the authors of this incredible article, Dr. Renata Costa. Welcome so much. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you and to have this conversation, as I mentioned, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy morning. I know it's crazy and we're recording on a Monday, so I hope we're kicking your week off right having this conversation. I just want to take a second and bring everybody up to speed on you because you're really pretty incredible. You're currently at Tufts, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background and how you ended up there.
Absolutely. So I graduated from Brazil. I'm originally from Brazil. Then I've moved to Australia, and I'm also Australian now, where I did my master's degree, completed my internship, and also did a graduate diploma in education at Murdoch University. Then I decided to do a residency in anesthesia and analgesia, and came to Tufts University to do my residency. And I'm a third year anesthesia resident, and I'm finishing out in July. So in 2016, I started here at Tufts. I started my residency here at Tufts, and it's when I got exposed to the chill protocol. And we started using for so many patients with such great results that I absolutely loved it, and that's how I got involved. And then I decided that it was time for more people to fall in love with the chill protocol like I did, and that's why we decided to publish this article.
Oh, that's a lot of work, but yeah. I love that you actually have an education degree complementing this, because really in this profession we are educators, are we not?
Exactly. Yeah, and I love teaching, and that's a large part of what I do, and I love teaching the students, and I love helping other veterinarians, especially with, for example, with the chill protocol when they're struggling with some more aggressive or, anxious patients.
Yeah, and we know that there is a lot of that going on. And to be fair, this article, beautifully written, you also had some co-authors as well. Can you tell us a little bit about them and introduce them to us?
Absolutely. So Dr. Alicia Karras, she was the author that developed the chill protocol, and she's a board-certified anesthesiologist. And Dr. Stephanie Bornswheel, she is board-certified behaviorist and also works at Tufts University.
And I think that really emphasizes the total package here, because we have to look at the chill protocol and how we're dealing with these patients kind of as a whole problem and a whole situation. It isn't just behavior and it isn't just sedation, and it is really the whole package, right?
Exactly, because we want the animals and also the owners to have a pleasant and, less stressful visits to the hospital. And it's also really important for the animals, because the stress is not great, right? Some degree of stress may be okay, but so many of these animals, they are so anxious and nervous and when they come to the hospital. So if we can manage that and make the whole visit to the hospital more pleasant to all involved and also safer for veterinarians and the owners, that's the aim.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's such a good point. And before we started recording, we were talking about the dentist, and I am terrified of the dentist and I have a bad experience. And I often feel this is a similar situation. It's not gratifying for anyone, is it? When we really want to help and we really want our patients to feel good and our clients to trust us, when we're having this experience, it's really hard to do.
Exactly. And it used to be that people and vets would just, fight the animals and get the IM pre-meds, but it was so stressful for the owners and for the animals and also for the vet as well. So if we can find a better way where the owners give the drugs orally at home, then, to facilitate anything we need to do to take care of our patients, that's what we want to do.
That's exactly right. And I think we can all you know, think back to some really cringeworthy times where we have participated in things we didn't feel good about, just trying to get them done because we didn't know a better way. And that's exactly what the chill protocol is. So let's create that baseline, because as we know, not all of our listeners may have read this incredible article yet, although I know they're going to drop everything and read it by the end of this podcast. But let's create that baseline. Can you explain the chill protocol for me and what it all entails?
Sure. So the chill protocol consists of at-home administration of three medications. So oral gabapentin, melatonin, and oral transmucosal acepromazine. So these medications, again, are given to the animal at home, where both the animal and the owner feel less anxious and stressed. And so the owner is instructed to give gabapentin 20 to 25 milligrams per kilogram in the evening before the medical appointment. Then the next day in the morning of the appointment, the owner should give the same dose of gabapentin and also melatonin. So for a small dog or a cat, we recommend 0.5 to 1 milligrams per kilogram of melatonin. For a medium dog, 1 to 3 milligrams per kilogram. And for a large dog, 5 milligrams per kilogram of melatonin. Now, the third step is 30 minutes to an hour before leaving home, the owner should give between 0.025 to 0.05 milligrams per kilogram of oral transmucosal injectable acepromazine. So for the chill protocol to really work, timing and owner compliance are absolutely essential.
So I guess I have so much I want to unpack here, because when I first read this chill protocol, I was so intrigued by the components and the timing and how this is working. But I just, before we get into all that and get too far ahead of ourselves, can we take a step back and what's the background and the history? How did the chill protocol come about? How did you guys come to this, and how did you personally end up involved?
So the chill protocol was developed by one of the co-authors, Dr. Alicia Karras, and it was in 2014. So the oral transmucosal ACE, you know, had been used for years to provide sedation and also to allow a calmer and smooth, you know, transportation of cats and dogs. It has also been used prior to euthanasias, and also, but not without controversies and some debate between behaviorists. The ACE has been widely used for fireworks and thunderstorm anxiety. Now, the oral gabapentin in people has been shown to have anxiolytic, sedatives, and also analgesic properties. And we found recent studies in cats showing that gabapentin was able to reduce fear response in cats. Again, unfortunately, there was a lack of studies in dogs, but we see the calming and sedative effects of oral gabapentin in our patients. And I guess hopefully now after our article, we see more studies evaluating the use of this medication in dogs. And basically, you know, it's really common for anesthesiologists to combine drugs for our patients in order to obtain reliable effects. But at the same time, we want to reduce possible side effects of using high doses of one drug. Although we've been using the chill protocol for years, Dr. Karras told me that she first decided to combine all three medications, so gabapentin, ACE, and melatonin, when another veterinarian asked her for advice on how to manage a very fractious dog prior to his arrival in the clinic. And since then, we have also used and seen amazing results when the chill is given to fearful dogs, again, making their visit to the vet much less stressful. Now, the melatonin part of the protocol, to my knowledge, there are no studies investigating the use of oral melatonin in dogs or cats, but melatonin has been shown to reduce pre- and post-operative anxiety in people. And when used for nighttime restlessness in canine cognitive dysfunction, Dr. Karras noted improvement after given oral melatonin. So now we know that melatonin has calming effects and it's overall safe. And the safety, actually. So melatonin is a safe drug and can benefit dogs with hospital-associated fear and anxiety. On top of that, it's not expensive, and you can easily buy it at, you know, any pharmacy. So that's how the combo of gabapentin, melatonin, and ACE, you know, was developed. How the chill protocol was developed.
You know, when I first read the chill protocol, the melatonin use was really, you know, just intriguing to me. And I appreciate that you say that there are not a lot of studies behind it, and it's something that we're kind of learning more and more about. But I also think that it brings a component of comfort to our clients when they are seeing, you know, names that they can recognize. They feel more educated and a part of the process. And so I wonder if using melatonin doesn't bring almost like a level of comfort to the clients as well.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah.
Nothing. You know, just yeah, exactly. that familiar name.
Yeah, no, exactly. Even gabapentin, there's so many people that know about the drug. So yeah, potentially.
That's right. I think it's really interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing more studies come out about melatonin and maybe more usage and just relaxation and calming for our pets coming into the clinic. Because again, it to me is very, very interesting. And it, and like you said, it's something our clients can get their hands on. It's not hard to get a hold of. And we know that it helps relaxation and calm nervousness. I'm excited to see more of this into the future. And the veterinarians I've spoken with that have, you know, read your article also were very intrigued with that and excited to try to introduce that. Let me ask you as well, just out of curiosity, have you had the chill protocol for any hospitalized patients there? And do you continue it while they're there?
So in general, what I tend to do, I will continue the melatonin and the gabapentin. Not necessarily we need the ACE. So we have no hospitalized patients. Another thing that I like to use, and it works for some patients, not all of them, is the thunder shirt. So when they are in hospital, we've used the combo of GABA, melatonin, and ACE. Many times we can decrease and just give GABA. So it really depends on the patient. But yes, for sure, we use frequently for our patients in hospital. We don't wait until they get really, really anxious and nervous before, you know, giving the medications, because we don't have that, you know, familiar environment like the owners have when they give it at home. So we are a little bit early in giving the drugs.
You know, I love that. I think it's really important, two things that you say there. Number one is we don't wait. We don't wait for them to be scared. We don't wait for that threshold to be met. Let's get in front of it. We've learned the same thing in pain management, that we should be getting in front of these responses as early as we possibly can and not waiting until the patient and the client are already upset, because we just have a real energy funk going on at that point. So I think it's so important, and I love that you bring it to the forefront. The other thing that is making me so happy is this isn't just a behavioral issue. Good visits are an important part of hospitalization and healthy patients. And so I love that you continue to maintain the control over the anxiety as much as you can the entire time that patient is there. It isn't just about them getting into the hospital, and that we have to think about whole health from the time they check in to the time they check out, and that their emotional health is as important as their physical health.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. Now, just a little myth busting here, because the other thing I was very surprised to hear about was the ACE promazine on board. So, you know, I guess in my head and what I've understood is that ACE promazine is not always the best way to go, because it does cause that sedation without the anxiety relief. Is it really the specific combination that makes the chill protocol include that ACE promazine? And can we kind of just discuss, you know, the ACE itself? Because I think there'll be a lot of questions about that. I know I had them.
Yeah, so we believe that there is some bias against the cyproconazine, but that, as you can see, the chill protocol is not only supported by anesthesiologists, but also by our board-certified veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Barnes-Wheel. Again, she's one of the co-authors. So ACE elicits behavior-modifying effects, and which is tranquilization and sedation in animals. And for sure has synergistic effects with other sedatives, anxiolytics, and, you know, opioids, producing calming effects. So the reason we support its use is because we have seen how helpful the combination of the three drugs is to manage aggressive and fear-aggressive dogs and cats without having significant side effects. Again, we routinely use ACE as part of our pre-medication protocols of healthy dogs, because it reduces the dose of induction agent and inhalant requirements. It smooths recovery after general anesthesia. And we also give it postoperatively to patients who appear anxious. So there's a little bit of bias. And when we combine the three drugs, it just produces such good results that obviously people need to understand, that veterinarians prescribing need to understand, you know, their own patients. We won't give ACE to a patient that's hypovolemic. But we believe that it causes the chill protocol with the ACE in there will provide excellent, you know, relaxation and sedation to the patients. One thing I want to recommend is using the injectable formulation of acepromazine, due to unreliable results with the ACE tablets observed clinically. The tablets, they have a long onset of action, so they take a long time to start working and can also have really long duration of actions, and we don't need that. We just need for that period of time, and if we require extra, then we can, you know, give it again. So that's why we recommend using the injectable formulation of ACE.
And that's an important distinction. Thank you.
Yeah, and I guess like there's a little bit of bias. I guess you can never please everyone. We do believe that ACE works well. That's why many people use for thunderstorms. I know there's debate and there's controversies pretty much with anything we do, any drugs we use. But for sure, we for the chill protocol, it works. I've seen people trying to do the chill, but just part of the chill and using just the gabapentin melatonin. And when they didn't give the ACE, they didn't actually achieve, adequate sedation for the patients.
That's an important point to make. And so thank you for that distinction, because it does seem to be that there is bias. And I think it's an important thing to talk about. You're right. We will never all come to one consensus. But, when we look to the experts, when we look to the people who are creating these protocols like yourself, I love the opportunity to have this conversation and talk about why the ACE promazine is great, why we want to include it with injectable. So I think that's really important. And kind of, to play to that point, what are the contraindications? Where are we not using the chill protocol? What else do we need to be cautious of?
So basically, the chill is safe to use for any healthy dog and cat, but it's contraindicated for critically ill patients. Geriatric patients and also really young animals, they may only need the gabapentin. Even for the critically ill patients, you may only need the gabapentin to calm them and relax them and sedate them a little bit. Now, ACE is relatively contraindicated when the spleen is being imaged, so for ultrasound. Although our radiologists are usually okay with it and they are notified that it is on board. And you can see for Trotman's case, we use ACE for an abdominal ultrasound with no problems. Obviously, you need to mention to your ultrasonographer, to your, the diplomat that, or the vet that's scanning the patient, to make sure that they know that the ACE is on board. Now, also, it's contraindicated in patients with low cardiac output states, patients with severe anemia or dehydration, in which this is why the clinician in charge needs to understand their patients to determine if the doses and if all the drugs are adequate to use for that specific patient. Now, if the patient, for example, is to undergo anesthesia, and if the patient may be, if there's any potential for the animal to be negatively impacted by the additional in potential hypotension caused by ACE, for example, if the animal has elevated creatinine, then we'll avoid using the ACE. For example, another example will be for cats with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, so HCM. We may still use the chill protocol, and the reason why is because struggling is far worse for them than any anesthesia concerns. And as long as they're not volume depleted. One extra thing I wanted to add is that it's important to remember that sedated dogs and cats can be more prone to decompensation during grooming, when exposed to heat or cold, or also during travels, as ACE can interfere with the ability to thermoregulate and complicate hypovolemia. So for any sedated patient, we just need to be extra careful with the environment that they are. Make sure that's not too hot or not too cold for them as well.
That's important as well. And great points. Thank you for pointing that out, because, you're absolutely right. Sometimes we do have to weigh the risks and the concerns, because we know that we can't explain to our patients everything will be fine. Don't struggle. And so it's good to know where we can adjust and be cognizant, but also that this is a pretty safe protocol so far. And sort of, again, to that point, in your article, we learned about Trotman. You've talked about him a little bit and had a wonderful outcome with Trotman. Do you have any other clinical experiences or cases where you've used a chill protocol or seen it used that are particularly near and dear to your heart, where you know you were really able to overcome some fear and anxiety?
There are so many, I can tell you. We have our fair share of, really fearful, aggressive, anxious dogs coming here to Tufts. So the chill protocol has been shared with many colleagues and had nearly universal positive feedback. the veterinarians and owners have contacted us after seeing amazing results, and they are so relieved to not have to struggle with the patients anymore. They report no need for forceful restraint, and after the chill, dogs show little objection to being muzzled for, you know, IM pre-medication with other drugs, or even there's no struggle to place an IV catheter. So I had a couple of patients coming for anesthesia that were extremely aggressive. The owners, you know, we couldn't even enter the room. And obviously we send them home and to come back later on with, you know, receiving all the drugs from the chill protocol. Recently I had two patients that were, you know, fear aggressive, and they received the chill protocol. And after that, we could, you know, easily muzzle them. Actually, the owners of one of them muzzled the dog with no problems. We were able to place an IV catheter and give some opioids and start and induce anesthesia. So it's really rewarding to see how the owners note the difference and are so happy that the veterinarian and the dogs are not struggling anymore.
And we know that when the clients are happy and they will be more compliant, they will bring the pets in, the pets will get more access to care. And so it is a success story when the client sees it, because we know they are the ones so often, especially in cats, that will say, I don't take my cat to the vet because they hate it. And they really anthropomorphize. And I don't think they're wrong, but it doesn't get the cats or the patient in to see us. And it can be so discouraging because we can't take care of them if they're not in front of us. And so these success stories are incredibly important, I think, to battling our own burnout and fatigue and struggling with our patients, knowing that we can create a happy visit for everybody front to back. And to that point, you mentioned you're sharing this protocol a lot with your colleagues. How are you getting the word out? We were really excited about the article. What are some other ways you've shared the chill protocol?
So I think the Clinician's Brief article has done quite a lot to put it on the map, because more recently I've been contacted by so many vets from different countries, from Germany, Brazil. It reached far more, you know, people and veterinarians than before, which is really, you know, we're really glad that people are having, you know, they have questions and they're having good experiences with the chill protocol. Dr. Karas have presented the chill protocol at conferences and the word travels. Several vets from all over the world reach out to us asking for advice about managing difficult patients even before the article was published. So that's how we, you know, spread the word about, you know, the combination, the chill protocol combo, and how we, since 2014 and my own experience since 2016, we have great results. The chill has been used for several patients coming to have surgery, and also for many of our oncology patients that need to come to the hospital on a constant basis. Other services that use the chill routinely are ophthalmology, dermatology, internal medicine, dentistry, and oncology. Also, ER patients that require short-term follow-up are also prescribed the chill protocol for those visits with great results.
That's incredible. It sounds like there is a lot of experience out there, but we're getting that ripple flowing through the waters of veterinary medicine. And that's very exciting. And I kind of want to hear more and more of these success stories. And I hope our listeners share success stories as they use the chill protocol, or if they already have been. And as they're introducing this protocol, I just kind of wanted to speak to, you know, creating these best practices around pharmaceutical options for fear-based aggression. I know that there are some veterinary professionals out there struggling. What do you guys notice are the most currently used methods of dealing with fear-based aggression in practice compared to the chill protocol? And, you know, how do they compare, and what makes this such a better option?
So I'm not very experienced with other protocols out there, so it's hard to compare the chill protocol to anything else. And the reason why I like the chill is because the focus is on the oral medication solution that is given by the owner at home when the animal is not yet on a stressful environment like being at the hospital. So we haven't really compared. We haven't felt the need to compare the chill protocol to anything else, because it just worked so well for us. One thing that I wanted to touch base is that behavioral training is for sure wonderful and should be widely recognized and followed by the veterinary community. But the vast majority of cases that are seen at our hospitals involve situations where the pet is sick or needs diagnostic or treatment, and there's not time for the owner to begin a desensitization program. And that's why I like the SHIELD protocol, because again, oral medication solution given at home by the owner.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning that, because we do know that there is behavioral aspects and modification. But like you said, this isn't the time to be worried about it. We have to get great patient care. We have to get our hands on these patients and take care of them. And we know it's not a perfect world. So creating that environment, but I appreciate you mentioning that because it is very important. And I do think that in general practice, like you said, we need to follow through on that whole patient health, including the behavioral aspects. It's important. And I love that, you know, you mentioned you haven't compared. When you said that, I thought to myself, you know, why fit in when you're born to stand out, right? And the SHIELD protocol really stands out. We don't need to fit in with any of the other protocols. But, you know, the thing is I would argue there aren't a lot of protocols. I think we have a tendency to throw darts at a board and go with what we kind of know works, but we don't have anything we super love. And so having this as a safe, well-utilized, comprehensive protocol, I think it's going to create a lot more happy, healthy pet visits. And I'm so excited about that. And to the point of talking about the future, are you guys doing studies on the SHIELD protocol? Do we have data on the outcomes?
So we don't have any papers yet, but we are collecting data. So the plan is, you know, we are designing studies, prospective and observational studies to assess the SHIELD protocol further. So hopefully we're going to get some data and can publish a little bit more about it. Dr. Barnes-Wheel and Dr. Karras, hopefully will start collecting some data from veterinarians, you know, from their experience with the CHIL protocol. So that's hopefully will come out soon.
That's exciting. And, you know, we love data, statistics, and numbers. There's nothing sexier than that in the veterinary field. So we can't wait to see it. But like you said, at the end of the day, all we need to do is observe. We see that this works. We see happier patients. And everyone's happier and healthier because of it. And that's part of why we really wanted to spotlight this segment and make sure we got to have more of this conversation behind the published content so we could really understand what an amazing protocol this is and how much it can be helpful. Now, it's kind of brings me over to our keep it brief segment now. Not too much pressure there. We rarely keep it too brief, but I want to know, how do you talk to clients or coach teams on talking to clients about the CHIL protocol?
So we did create a handout about the CHIL for clients that helps. And as well, we give these to veterinarians. So if anyone wants some help, I think using the clinician's brief article with that table that we created and also the take-home messages, I think it highlights the important things about the CHIL protocol. We always explain the importance of timing and owner compliance for the success of the CHIL. So it's really important to explain to the owners, yes, the animal needs to get all three drugs, and yes, it needs to be, the ACE needs to be 30 minutes to an hour prior to the putting the dog in a car. So it's important to highlight these important aspects of the CHIL protocol for the success of the CHIL protocol. Another important thing is the prescriber, so the clinician, is responsible for knowing the patient's general health condition and when the CHIL protocol and the medications might be contraindicated or they should be administered at lower doses. So it's important to understand the drugs you're prescribing, and hopefully the article helped a little bit explain when do we use it and what are the aspects that you need to be careful with. Normally, we talk to the owners and we highlight that the aim is also to get a little bit of sedation. So the dog may be a little bit ataxic. And so the owners need to be careful with, you know, the travel, with, you know, with stairs, for example. So we always talk to them and explain what to look for. And again, the aim is to have the patient that's more relaxed, but the drugs we're using, some animals may have some degree of ataxia, which is expected. It's not harmful, but the owners and the veterinarians need to be aware of that.
That's a great point. And obviously we want to be cautious with that. And you're right. I think we have to coach our clients on the importance of the timing and what to expect, because if they know what to expect, we can expect better patient outcomes.
Exactly. And also if you use the CHIL protocol once and, you know, you decided to try lower doses, at the low end of the dose we suggest, for example, and it was not enough, so then the next time you can increase the gabapentin dose, for example, and then you will find a balance and what works for that specific patient.
Wonderful points. And that's right. None of our patients are the same, right? They don't all read the book. So we have to remember protocols still don't trump the individual, right?
Exactly. Unfortunately, don't all read our books and everything. They don't do exactly what we want them to do. But there's always a way to, you know, tailor the CHIL protocol to suit that specific animals. And in general, it's like increasing the dose. And instead of using the low dose ACE, you will use the higher suggested recommended dose of ACE, for example.
That's a wonderful point. And for more information on those specific doses and all the other information behind the exact drugs that we're using and more information from the article in general, you can find it in Clinician's Brief, May 2019. So if you have not already gone and read that article, please drop what you're doing unless you're driving, get where you're going. Have a look at this article and let us know what you think about it. Dr. Costa, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to be here today and for creating better patient visits with your colleagues, taking the time to write this article so we can all feel a little bit better about what we're doing.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you. And I'm really, really happy that, you know, the CHIL protocol is now going everywhere in, you know, different countries, and more people are, you know, seeing the good results and having, you know, and being able to manage your patients without struggling and providing good patient care. It's also providing a less stressful environment for them. So it's great to hear that hopefully more and more people will try the CHIL protocol and they can, you know, let us know and email us and tell us what they think about it.
And to that point, where can they reach you to tell you their success stories or if they have any questions?
So they probably can reach and email me, Renata, Renata.Costa. At Tufts.edu.
That's perfect. And we'll put that email address in the show notes. We can't wait to hear more about this. Dr. Costa, thank you again so much for joining us today and helping create better visits for everyone.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can listen to podcasts as well on our website at clinicians.brief.com/podcasts. You can find us at facebook.com/clinicians.brief, on Twitter at clinicians.brief, and on Instagram at clinicians.brief. You can also drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief, the podcast, is a Brief Media production produced by Alexis Ustry, sound by Randall Stupka, hosted by me, Becky Mosser, with special thanks to production assistant Michelle Monkrez.